Órale pues, raza, welcome to Chicano Highlights. I am your host, The Beto Man, and we have a very special guest with us here today, Bertha Oropesa. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good, good. Tell me a little bit about your parents.
My parents were born in El Paso, Texas, but my grandparents were from Chihuahua, Chihuahua. So they were here on a work furlough type situation. And after my parents were born, they actually went back to Chihuahua and continued their education there. Once they reached 21 or so, they were married and they came back to Los Angeles. My dad was an engineer draftman, very creative man, mm-hmm. very inspiring man. And my mom was into music, and she also loved medicine, and she wanted to be a pharmacist. But at that time, she was really the only one that was supporting the family in Chihuahua, so she could not go to school. She had to take care of the family.
Okay. What was their names?
My mom is Berta Oropesa Alfaro Romo, and my dad is Oscar Eusebio Oropesa.
All right. And brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers. My brother is Oscar Oropesa Jr. and Humberto Oropesa.
All right. And you fall in where? Were you the oldest?
I'm the baby.
Okay. So you're the baby. All right. And all three of you were born where?
We were born in L.A. at Queen of the Valley Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, well, at the time, my dad was kind of traveling various places. That's where his job had him going. So many times my mom would be at home, but she would be working. So we were at that time called, you know, those latchkey kids.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Or my brother, who was the oldest, Oscar, would be in charge of taking care of us. So we knew that we could be out there playing after school, and of course after we did our homework.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that come dawn, it was like the bewitching hour.
Orale.
We had to be in that house before that dawn hit the door.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom would be calling to see, ¿dónde andan? Mm-hmm. You know, so we were inside that house. We knew better.
All right. Where did you go to school?
Elementary school, I went to Malabar, which was literally not even half a block from my house.
Mm-hmm.
Junior high school, I went to Belvedere Junior High School, which is also in East L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And high school, I went to Roosevelt High School.
All right. And now you don't have to tell me the exact year, but más o menos around what years?
For elementary, was graduated in 68.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Roosevelt in 68 and graduated in 71.
Mm-hmm. All right. And tell me about the time, that particular time. Was there discrimination? What was the issues going on in L.A.?
Well, you know, as you're growing up, it depends on your family culture. My mom, because we were raised, or our culture, our familia was from Chihuahua. So it was really interesting that for my mom, and the history she gave us, you know, that Pancho Villa was not a bandit. He was a hero. And so when I started going to school, I recall them teaching, saying that he was a bandit. And I was like, no, that's not true. He was a hero.
Mm-hmm.
So there was kind of a, you know, a conflict or a difference. And also, we always spoke Spanish at home. That was just a rule. My mom said, you know, outside the door, you speak English. Inside the house, you speak Spanish. And at times, you know, we would forget. And so we would speak Spanish at school.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get reminded that you don't speak Spanish at school. You speak English. So, you know, little subtleties that you kind of, you know, you see it and you realize it and you go, oh, okay, there's a double standard type thing going on. So it wasn't really harsh, but you know, you still noticed it.
And so were you involved in the Chicano Movimiento at all?
Actually, yes.
Well, tell me about it.
Well, when I was in high school, of course, they had the walkouts. And, you know, our teachers were very, very good with us. I have to admit that. But, you know, you had to make a decision. You're either going out or you're staying in. And so we went out. Mm-hmm. And we did the march, the moratorium. And that was a very interesting time, considering I couldn't believe the situation. I couldn't believe the things that were going on. I was completely shocked, you know, when we were at the park, at the, I guess it's Ruben Salazar Park now, because the riot police came in busloads as people were just sitting there listening to speakers. You know, they weren't doing anything. Just literally sitting there listening to the speakers speak. And they came from behind. Where people were facing the stage and the riot police came from behind. And literally started just whacking people with no warning, no nothing. And I couldn't believe it. I just thought, this isn't happening. This is not America. This is not, you know, I it was just totally mind-blowing to me. And tear gassing people, old people, kids. There was one situation that my friend and I particularly got into where as everybody started running towards the stage, there was a gentleman in a wheelchair that got knocked over. And so a friend of mine and I, you know, grabbed him and picked him up and got his wheelchair, and we kind of ran across the street, and we were banging on the house right across the street, and those people were scared, of course, and we just told him, you know what, just take him in, that's all, just, you know, don't worry about us, just take him in. And as they were letting him in, they tear gassed us, and tear gassing is not fun. It literally burns your skin. Everything starts coming out from everywhere, your eyes, your nose, your spit, you name it. And I never realized you could get burned by tear gas, and it was like peeling from my skin. But we ended up jumping over walls and, you know, getting out of there, because, you know, you sat there, I you know, to this day I still can't understand why that had to be the way it was. It was, no one was doing anything wrong, and yet it happened, you know. But, you know, it's I'm assuming it's just part of changes that had to happen to bring realization to the situation at that time.
How did it change you?
Well, it made me a more, I don't want to say aggressive, assertive, that's the better word, more of an assertive person, and making sure that, you know, the rights of not only myself, but of, you know, friends or people around me were going to be recognized. I mean, that they were not just going to be pushed around. We're not going to just be told, oh, you just do this and that's the end of that. There had to be justification for the things that they were going to decide to do. And so that really kind of set that into my mind.
So where did you proceed from here? Did you go to a community college? Did you get married?
I went to East LA College. And I think, like most of us when you were youngsters, we decide, yeah, we want to go to college, but we also want to go to a lounge. Want to study in lounge. So I went to school, and I did do good. But, you know, of course, I had my moments where I'd kind of hang out in the lounge and not go to class. And so I kind of goofed around for a year or two. Then I decided, okay, you know, it's time to get serious, because education was one thing that my mom and my dad just pushed on us since we were small. And that's something that is so important that I can't stress enough, that if you're not in school, get in school. If you're in school, stay in school. Take the time to learn, because education, regardless, is such an important thing in life. A lot of times we think, oh, it's not going to do anything for me. But you would be surprised that if you just take the moment, and, you know, it's a little sacrifice, it is, because, you know, you don't get to go and party sometimes. You have to sit there and study, and you have to go take your tests, and you have to finish your courses. But in the long run, it will be so much better for yourself, for your family, and for your future. So I did go to East LA College, and then I went to, I guess because of my mom, who loved, you know, pharmacy medicine. I always loved medicine aside from my music. Music was always a part of my life from the time I was 5 years old, because my mom also sang. My dad sang. So it was, music was always there. And in our home, when we would have a family party, we would all sing. We would get the guitars out, and we would all sing. And so that actually started me musically, just that started me there. So music had always been an important part of my life. I had started singing, I guess you could say, professionally at the age of 11. And I was in a group that was called The Admirations. My brother Bert was actually the one that was in the band. And because I had to always tag along with one of my brothers, I had to go with him to rehearsal. At one of the rehearsals, I was in the porch in the front of the house, and they were inside the house toward the back. One of the musicians came around, and they heard me singing, and he says, "Oh my God, you can sing." I said, no, I can't. I can't. Because I thought, oh no, my brother's going to get upset with me because I'm not supposed to be singing out there. So anyways, that's how I actually got into the band, because they heard me, so I started singing with the band. And we used to play at the teenage fair at the Hollywood Bowl. Oh, no, Hollywood Palladium. And we happened to win the prize. You know, we were the best band. And, you know, at 11 years old, that's pretty impressive. We thought, yeah, we were bad. We had fun. So music was always there. I was always doing some kind of music, but always having to do school. So music and school was always together. It was, I would do some music, or I would go sing on the weekends. And then, of course, during the week, I had to be going to school and doing my studies. So many musicians out there, I always tell them, you're going to start music, you still got to get an education outside of that. Mm. You know, and I mean, that's my upbringing. And now if you're blessed that you get the opportunity to be a great star and great, you know, perfect. Personally, my mom put it in my head, ¿Qué vas a hacer cuando estás vieja? And you can't sing. And I thought, hey, that's a good thought. Mm-hmm. Because we don't see our lives sometimes in the future. We see our lives right here, right now. And we sometimes forget that, you know, unless the Lord comes and takes us, we still have tomorrow. And what are we going to do tomorrow if we didn't do something today to prepare for tomorrow?
Exactly. Now, your major at East LA Community College, what was it?
It was, I was nursing. I was doing nursing. Mm-hmm. So I was doing all my prerequisites for my requirements to get into LA County USC School of Nursing. And so I there was a waiting list, of course. So in the interim, you know, if you have to wait for something, you don't waste your time. Mm-hmm. You still take that opportunity to advance or get some of the classes out of the way, and that's exactly what I did. I decided, okay, well, I have to take English, I have to psych, I have to take biology, I have to take all these courses, chemistry, you know. Okay, well, I can do those now while I'm waiting. So I went ahead and did that, and when it was time to start school, it was so much easier because I didn't have to take those courses along with my nursing courses. But so I was going to school, and I was singing in a group called East Side Connection, and that singing was supporting me to go to school. It was a time that I look back and I think, you know, Lord, how did I do this? Because I would be on the wards or on the floor from 6:30 to 3:30 or so. I'd come home, I'd study for about an hour, sleep for about an hour, get up, get ready to go to my gig, take my books with me. At the gig, we would be, because there was two groups, and so the one band would be playing while we were on a break, and during that break, I'd be putting, you know, earplugs in and studying. And the guys would look at me and go, "Are you crazy?" I go, "Hey, I got to do this." So they were very supportive of me, I've got to admit. The guys were great. And so I managed to graduate from LA County USC. I got my RN. And after that, as soon as I graduated, we went on the road for a while. So I was on the road, you know, doing music now. And in between, we'd come back, then I'd be working as RN over at the hospital.
And RN means?
Registered nurse.
All right.
So after I did that for a while, you know, so it was kind of back and forth. I'd be working and, you know, the Lord, that's the way I look at it. The Lord's blessed me so much because I've had opportunities where, you know, as they say, ask and you shall receive. Well, you know, I would ask them. I say, can I work so many days? And then if I have to go on the road, can I be gone for 2 months and then come back? Sure. I don't know too many places that let you do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened. It would happen for me. You know, so it was, like I said, it was a blessing. After a while, you know, I was doing that and I decided, you know, I think I want to do something more. Initially, when I first was going to East LA, I was kind of between, I was undecided if I wanted to do medicine or if I wanted to become an attorney. So it was in between those two, you know, careers. So I was going, yeah, I want to be an MD. No, I don't want to be an MD. No, I want to be an attorney. No, I don't want to be, you know, you're back and forth. You don't know what you want to do, but you know you want to do something. So I decided to go into medicine, but as time progressed, I thought, you know, I want to do something more. So I decided, okay, well, I think I'm going to go become a registered nurse practitioner. At that time, I had met my husband, and we moved up to San Jose. And when I was in San Jose, I had applied for to attend UCLA Harbor, our women's nurse practitioner program. And again, you know, there's a little waiting list, so you have to kind of wait. And once I was accepted, I had to move back because we were living in San Jose. So I moved back to LA, and again, thank the Lord for mothers. My mom helped me with my now two children at that time, Vanessa and Lawrence. So she helped me with my children while I was going to school. Well, it's a two-year program, but there's a course that you could take, and this particular course was an accelerated program. And an accelerated program means it's a two-year course jammed into a few months. So you cannot miss not one day, not one class, not one anything. Intense, intense, intense. But I didn't want to go to school for 2 years, especially having children. It's so much harder. You have to kind of be there and you got to work and you got to give them time. So I thought, okay, I'm going to prepare myself. So you prepare yourself, you know, you prepare yourself mentally to be in the situation. And so I did. I put my mind to it. I said, okay, you know, we got to do this. And we did it, finished it. And that was back in 1984. So I've been a nurse practitioner in women's health, OBGYN, for the last, 20-something years?
Wow. Congratulations.
And I love it. Everybody asks me, you know, you've been doing it for so long. Do you love it? I said, you know what? I love my job. I love it. I love doing what I do.
All right. And getting back to your music now, who were the people in East LA Connection?
Okay, now, in East Side Connection, this band was absolutely so much fun. Some talented, talented musicians. We had Hector Gonzalez, who was on bass. We had Harry Scorzo, who was one of our musical directors, played violin. We also had Jeff Lee. He came in after Harry. He played guitar. We had Dick Mitchell on sax. We had Sam, at that time we called him Sam, now he's Sal. Cracchiolo on trumpet. We had, of course, Mr. Salvador Rodriguez from War on drums. Well, Jeff played guitar. We had various musicians coming in and out, kind of like most bands, you know.
Yes, of course.
Coming in and out of the band. We had John Sercides on guitar and vocals. I had my brother Bert, Humberto Ropeza. He was on keyboards and vocals. We had Miss Didi Scorzo, who is Mr. Harry Scorzo's wife, on vocals. Like I said, we had so many different musicians, I can't even remember. We had Poncho coming with us at one point. Brandon Fields, you know, just different musicians. And it was great. It was great because they're all so talented.
All right. And so then, did you guys put out an album?
We did. We did, at that time we had, it was a disco era. Mm-hmm. So we had our vinyl, which was psychedelic vinyl. And, you know, sometimes people see those and go, what's that? Mm-hmm. Most people see that vinyl and it's something that's really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a brand spanking new was one of our albums. And I believe Hector has some of those that are redone. He remastered them, and they have them on CDs. So if you wanted to purchase them, you can get them from Rampart Records.
All right. And now, did you have any acting opportunities?
Yes. It was very unusual how I got that. I was in Zoot Suit, the movie. I had Rudy Salas, you know, from Tierra, and Steve Salas, those guys, their wife called me and says, you know, they're doing this this audition for girls to go sing for this movie, Zoot Suit. I think you'd be good to go try out. And then I got like several calls. It seemed like back to back. I got another call from Willie Marin that told me the same thing. Come on, you know, go down there, try it. And so, you know, they had told me, well, you know, you need to get some headshots. And I thought, what the heck are headshots? You know, I was not into film, so I had no idea. And headshots are basically just, you know, headshots of your face, of your head.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and I went ahead and auditioned. And there was actually two calls for that movie. Initially, it was when they made the first call, I guess it was just locally. And so the initial three pachucas that they picked were not the same pachucas that were in the movie. They decided that, no, you know what, they needed to put it out there internationally. So the first three of us that got picked now were kind of put back in the pond, so to speak. And they did another call, and now it was internationally. And I thought, oh, forget it. I'm never going to get this part again. So there was so many people at this call, and they brought us in the first time, especially myself. I was brought in, and they were, you know, making different combinations of girls to see, you know, what, I don't know, if they were looking for style, they were looking for voice. So I got called in once, and that was it. I never got called back in. I thought, wow, I guess I'm out of this thing. So at the end, when they started saying, okay, that's it, they've picked their girls, I was getting up to walk out because I thought, well, I guess I'm done. So they go, no, you're staying. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, you're staying. They picked you right from the first time. So it was very interesting to do that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone really realizes that a lot of movies are a lot of hurry up and wait. So you know, they're rushing, hurry, we're getting to the part, and you know, putting makeup and packing everything on, and you're sitting there and you're like, okay. And then they go, oh no, wait a minute, we got to do one other thing. So now you're waiting another hour and a half. And then it's again, okay, hurry, we're going to do this. Oh no, wait. So that's what we call it, hurry up and wait. So, but it was interesting. It was very, very interesting, you know, Luis Valdez and Danny Valdez and all those guys, Eddie Olmos. It was fun. It was a very interesting and a lot of fun to do.
Was there any problems?
No, none. We had good time. It was very good.
Around what year did this come out, Muscle Minos?
We did it in 1980. I know we finished it around October, because I think it was released in 1981, because mm-hmm. I remember it was towards the end of the year that we were actually finished, and I think they released it in 81.
Mm-hmm. So how many kids did you have?
I have two.
Two.
Mm-hmm.
What are their names?
Vanessa Hernandez and Lawrence Hernandez.
All right. And what other groups were you in?
Oh, my God.
Musical okay. groups.
So let's see. I was in the Admirations was the first band.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a little band that we had called the Love Affair in junior high school. Then I was with Cold Duck briefly. And I was with Cannibal and the Headhunters, but it wasn't Cannibal. It was Frankie. But I for the life of me, I cannot remember the name of our band.
Okay.
And that was very educational.
Mm-hmm.
Because Frankie was a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
In that, the thing that I loved about this particular group was vocals, because it was Dee Dee, Dolores Scorzo, Frankie, Chuck, and myself. And vocally, we would be able to just blend. And it's always fun to have other vocals that you can blend with and be so in tune that we would know if somebody hit a wrong note, everybody else would change to cover for that note. And then we would look at each other and just nod our heads and go back to our notes. It was great. I loved it. And Frankie would always say, remember, whatever happens at home or whatever happens outside of here is outside of here. Once you hit that stage, it's all about performing.
Mm-hmm.
So you leave your problems at home.
Mm-hmm. What other groups?
Then I was with, this one is with Eastside Connection for the about three years or so. Then I took a leave, and that's when I had the kids, and I went up to San Jose. And I came back to Los Angeles in 1987 or so. Bought a house, and we stayed here. And I had not let too many people know that I was back, because my kids were still a little bit small. And I thought, well, not until they're a little bit older, then I'll probably get back into singing. So, but it kind of got out there. So I started kind of singing with different people. I did background vocals for Jerry Gonzalez. And I'll do backgrounds for anybody. I have no problems doing backgrounds for anybody. I just love to help people if I can. And I figure, you know what? If I help them, they'll turn around and help me one day. That's just the way I look at it. So during that time, I was called by a group who I'm with now, Chico. And I've been with Chico now for 16 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Great, great bunch of guys. You know, they play all different types of music, and they're all very versatile. The guys, well, our bass player is Joe Espinoza. Sax player is Adolfo Martinez. Our trumpet player, conga player, is Gilbert Papo Avila. Danny D is on guitar. Excellent, excellent player. We also have right now John Cercidas, who had been with me in Eastside Connection, and he's a guitar player and vocalist. At the moment, we have Martin Medina on drums. And I think that's it.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. And can you, I believe there's a reunion going on?
Oh, yes. Thank you for mentioning that. On November the 12th of 2011, at the Montebello Country Club, the Quiet Canon, we'll be having our 40th reunion. How time flies.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be having Cold Duck and ourselves, Chico, will be performing.
All right. Well, once again, thank you very much for coming in. We really do appreciate it. You'll come back, ¿verdad?
I would love to come back. Thank you for having me.
All right. And is there any messages you want to tell young chicanitas out there?
Stay in school. Stay in school.
All right. Orle pues, raza, that's going to do it for us. You've been listening to Chicano Highlights. I am your host, Beto, the Beto Man, and you have been listening to the interview with Bertha Oropeso. There you go.
Thank you.
Ándale pues, raza. Hasta la próxima. Ahí te guacho.
You are listening to EastLAReview.com, internet radio. This is Bertha Oropesa, and I'm encouraging you to stay in school.
Que la vida es muy cruel, tiene que saber que no es así, que en la vida es una hermosura y hay que destiny. Yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sunny, you smiled at me, girl, and you eased the pain. You're my spark of nature's light. You're my one and only sweet delight. Sunny, one so true. I love you.
Sunny, 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 Sunny.